Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese. It's another week of American Tennis. Now in our, gosh, we start our fourth year already of the American Tennis program. And each week we try to bring you cutting edge information, cutting edge instruction, cutting edge, listen, opinions. Your job, two folks, is to stand up and speak out and to say those things that need to be said and to address issues, not people. We always say you can pretty much say anything you want to say, but we absolutely need you to step forward and to say what needs to be said. If you want to be on the program, you can call area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. We would like your opinion. We need your insights. And dang, I'm a little bit bummed out this morning. I was hoping that we would get one of the best coaches in America, Coach Randy Blumenthal, to be able to come on to the show and to give some of his insights. I've had a lot of feedback about his five action steps to sort of right the ship with American Tennis, and boy, what a good program we had a few weeks back. Go to our website at chuckcreasy.net, and you can see Randy's program from about a month ago. Also, you go to urtennisnetwork.com. That's urtennisnetwork, that letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S, network.com, and you can get all the programs there on not just my show, but all of the past shows from Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program, a hit program for the last 3 years, and plus also Steve Clark's West Coast tennis program, Jason Haynes. Thank you, Jason Haynes, for being the CEO and the founder of the UR Tennis Network, but his collegiate program comes on 2 hours from right now if you want to listen to it live. And of course, John Denise's hit program on Florida high school tennis, and great insights there. So we've got a whole lot to cover today, and I want to make sure I get it all in because our program will be just a bit shorter. We're only going to have a 45-minute program today because it is a program without a guest. Usually we need that extra few minutes when we do have a guest, but Coach Blumenthal just had let me know that he will not be able to call in today. And we have a few programs lined up, and you know that I often like to talk about political issues in tennis, and I've been on a four-year, five-year, a multiple-year quest of trying to keep our sport from getting dumbed down. And actually, folks, it goes back to when the racket revolution, if you want to go that far back, the racket revolution, when they started making technology a very important factor in rackets. Golly, that's back, of course, to Prince's. Nobody knew what to make out of the Prince racket. At first, it was sort of like a people thought it was sort of a joke. The first year or two, a couple players used it. And we had Gene Mayer on about a month ago as well, and he said what first year he used a racket, and then the next year we had multiple players using it, and pretty soon technology became the way to do things in the 80s, and everybody was battling like crazy. And then you went to, I think the worst rackets out there were probably early 90s, because everything became power, and they've got it pretty close to being right now, I guess, if you would combine technology with feel. And it's still not, it'll never be wood again. If you want to have a good time, go out and hit with a wood racket on clay courts again, folks, and use your slice backhand. And do you want to get a buzz and a dopamine rush? For sure, hit slice backhands on clay courts with a old wood racket. If you could string it with gut, you'll remember why you started playing tennis in the first place. I've always said easy to pick up is easy to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down. When the technology became more important than the skill set, or let's say not more important, but became a big, big factor, it did change the game. So I can remember back late 80s, finally figuring out that I had players that did not go to the backboard anymore. Golly, when we had wood rackets, we used to have players go to the backboard every day and ka-plunk, 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 and you would hear after practice players working on skills on the backboard and trying to get that sweet spot right, trying to be able to hit it. It was an addicting thing for the players to hunt for that sweet spot. And hard to pick up, definitely was hard to put down. And the addiction sort of was the fact that they were able to now and then make contact in the middle, and it gave them a great buzz, a dopamine rush, as I've always said. And they wanted it again and again. And if you missed, it sort of, well, tennis is hard. And if you hit a good ball, you go, wow, that is the best thing I have felt in a long, long time. That's, I want that feeling again and again and again. And that was the addicting part of the before technology, that wood racket. And, you know, and then pretty much when we got to the high-tech rackets, I recognized in the mid to late 80s that people stopped going to the backboard. And I said, what in the world's going on here? I don't see kids on the backboard anymore. My players aren't going out there. I remember trying to assign 15 minutes a day where the players would go to the backboard and start practicing again on the backboard. And basically, if they made contact, if the technology allows you to make contact, it was sort of a neutral. Whereas with the wood racket, if you hit a good one, it was a plus. Bad one was a neutral, like, hey, tennis is hard. So it was a plus neutral feeling. When you hit a good one with technology doing the work, it's like, well, I'm supposed to. So that's a neutral. And when you hit a bad one, you go, oh, what in the world's going on here? That's terrible. You know, and so you lacked respect sort of for the game. I can remember very, very often taking my player. If I had a player with a bad attitude, I used to have an old wood racket in my office, and I'd go get the wood racket. I'd say, you're playing the rest of the day with the wood racket. Doesn't matter if you lose or whatever, you're going to play, but honor the game, respect the game. The game is hard. and you know, it usually does the job. Folks, yesterday I had my son out, who's 10, hitting with him, and I gave him, it isn't any super technical racket, but I want, you know, one of the newer rackets, and he was hitting with it. He goes, Papa, it feels funny. There's so much power. I was hitting with a 1970, which I used 1970 Bancroft Executive, a heaviest racket going. Now, my son's 10, and I gave him that racket, and he started whacking that ball right in the middle of the strings. And he said, one more, Papa, one more. And I said, son, I got to shut it down. He goes, no, one more, please. And the addiction was there, but he says, wow, Papa, that feels really, really good when I hit it good. I said, yep, son, that's the way a tennis ball is supposed to feel when it comes off your racket. So, folks, I started fighting about easier to pick up is easier to put down back. And I got to credit Coach Bob Spillman, Memphis, Tennessee, University Club out there, for giving me that quote back in those days. Easy to pick up, easy to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down, whether it's chess versus checkers, checkers versus chess, whether it's bait casting versus fly fishing. Have you ever seen a purist out on the river fishing, bait casting? People sit there and they worm and they get mad if they're not catching anything and they leave. A fly fisherman will cast over and over and over and over in hours just to see one of those trout rise. And if you've ever caught a trout on a river with a fly rod, you will never go back to bait casting. It is unbelievable. Try fly fishing instead of bait casting sometimes. And the same thing is true for the difference between electronic keyboard and a piano. My daughters play piano, so this is pretty cool. We have one of those electronic things that you can put the Hoochie Coochie Show on the side with buttons, and it's playing this rhythm and tambourines and everything, and I can peck out with one finger chopsticks, and it makes me sound like I'm Liberace or something. You know, so we've got one of those deals that Grandma bought a few years back. And then we have this old-fashioned Grandma piano. Actually, great-grandma, our Mama Beth, we called her. Mama Beth had it's probably 100 years old. It's an upright piano. It's old, and my daughter just goes in there and plays that, and she said, Papa, this sounds so good. I love it when I play a good song on this piano. So electronic keyboard versus piano, bait casting versus fly fishing, wood rackets versus technology, chess versus checkers or checkers versus chess. And we can go on and on and on. And, you know, have you ever noticed if you write a letter, how much more heartfelt it is than if you type out one that's an email? You want to get a response to something, handwrite a letter. And look, folks, I'm not trying to just go back to old-fashioned. That's not what I'm at. But basically, the title of my program today is Tolerance a Virtue? And what should we tolerate and what shouldn't we tolerate? And easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down. What should we do as far as our tolerance? Should we make school easier and just go after the results? Golly, I'm preaching in tennis all the time. I want my kids to fall in love. I'm preaching mastery. Mastery of the skill set is more important than success. Huh? If you work for mastery, you fall in love with the sport. If you don't, if you just work for the quick fix, do you really fall in love with it? Do you really have something that's going to stay? Do we really have the hook in the youngsters' mouths when we make things easier to pick up, easier to play, dumb down the scoring systems, easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down? All youngsters, all people want to be challenged. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back here in just a minute. It's American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy. Thank you.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Every week at noon on the UR Tennis Network, that's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S network, you can listen to American Tennis. Also, folks, go to urtennisnetwork.com, and you can listen to everyone's show. We have five great programs every week on the UR Tennis Network. So is tolerance a virtue? We hear a lot about tolerance out there, don't we, today? Tolerance. I mean, sure, we tolerate anyone, intolerance of other people's and other people's points of view, but what do you tolerate and what do you not tolerate? And I'm asking you as coaches, as parents, as teachers out there, and as youngsters, I've always told you, stand up, speak out, say those things that need to be said. Take a stand. Take a stand. And everyone needs to do that. We need to speak to the courage in each and every person. Because really we're going to develop a culture in tennis and a culture in our country that just tolerates anything. Now, wait a minute. We need to be tolerant of people, but do we need to be tolerant of all their actions? Or do we need to have those conversations, win the war of ideas, but to point out, because the minute we start tolerating anything, we will fall for anything as well. And the minute we'll fall for anything if we tolerate everything, and we tolerate people, but their actions sometimes, you know, if we love the person, would you tolerate your child doing the wrong thing? Would you tolerate your child cheating? Would you tolerate a good friend doing the wrong thing? Do we need to tolerate our organizations pushing down things on us, like the ITA has done with the scoring system, with the dumbing down that is going on with our point system? And I'm hitting a few nerves out there. I'm going to get some pushback here by people, but the point system, everyone knows that by now. There's probably not a single thing that has done more to dismantle initiative by tennis players and by tournament directors than the point system. I once was serving on a committee, and a guy said, "Hey, listen, we need more players. We need more tournament directors." And I raised my hand and said, "Why would someone want to be? Why would someone want to be a player now when you have to chase points all over the place? When I have to just go get points here, and are they going to really fall in love? Why would you want to be a tournament director with the point system the way it is, when you might work for 15 years to build up a great tournament, and then the officials with their regulations come in and say, sorry, you don't have this or this or this, you're regulated or dumbed down to a L3. And it's really, really probably one of the worst things we've ever had. So I didn't mean to get off on the point system here, but it's the worst thing we have going, and we need you to stand up, speak out. Another thing that I've been speaking up against is the dumbing down, the abbreviating of our scoring system. You all know that if you've been listening to our program for the past 3 years. We seem to get back to the politics of trying to play 10-point tiebreakers, no ad scoring, abbreviated sets, and all these things easier to pick up, and in the long run, the harm will be done. Now, is tolerance a virtue? Should we tolerate this? Let me talk to you very quickly here about a couple things that happened to me. The coaching convention is this week, and I know I haven't joined the ITA. I'm not going to join the ITA unless I absolutely positively have to. My school, my conference, or somebody says you have to join this union. It's a union. $500. And then you basically can go down, I guess, give your 2 cents worth. Well, I'm in that Hall of Fame. They've got me in the Hall of Fame. They put me in. They probably, you know, don't like that now that they thought I'd be retired forever or for good, but they thought I'd do no harm, I guess, putting me in there. But the point is I'm in that Hall of Fame, and I need to be able to speak out, stand up, and I was going to drive down there my 9 hours like I did 2 years ago, sit through the meetings, then try to get my 2 cents in, and basically get cut to bits and cut up by the people a couple years ago, a couple of the higher-ups. And we fought, and we got a ruling that was voted by everybody 21 to 19, and they went and changed what they wanted to do anyway. Now, we're under new leadership. That was old leadership. That was definitely not a democracy, that old leadership. They had pretty much who they wanted to on the board, and they did what they wanted to do. And it was set up. It was not set up for the good of the game. Education over entertainment, we can go into those discussions, but it was definitely not for the educational aspect of our athletes. Was for entertainment driven first. Tolerance of virtue. So I had to make this decision whether or not I'm going down over Christmas again to stand up, speak out, say what I want to say. My good friend Randy Blumenthal, he told me, Coach, what are you thinking? He said, look, he said, you've been battling this thing, and we need power somehow. We need more of a lobbying power. We need an organization, you know, like the MDTA, Men's Division I Tennis Association, has done a good job over 3 years. And, yes, University of Virginia would not have won the NCAAs last year if they had played no-ad scoring. Coach Brian Bowen, he knows that, and we've had that talk. If they'd had to play that quick, short, and scoring format, they wouldn't have won. The year before, I've pointed out, Southern Cal would not have won. They would have lost to Virginia, actually, that year. It took them many, many, 2 or 3 hours to get back into the match and to fight their way through. And needless to say, I've said it many times here, that the education part of the sport should take precedence over the entertainment part. But the higher-ups say no, they want the entertainment part, and they want to put their label on this change of 132 years of the same rule, the barometer for 132 years. Is tolerating this a virtue? Coach Randy Blumenthal said, Coach, said, Chuck, look, you remember the movie Amadeus? He says, you know, we had, you know, Mozart on his deathbed wrote his own requiem. He says, you keep battling this thing. You're writing your own requiem. And he sent me the link to the dog sent me a link to Mozart's Requiem. He said, stay home with your family, you know, spend time with your family. These guys aren't going to listen to you, and they haven't. And for me, it's like really, really a difficult decision. Am I shirking my responsibility? Am I becoming cowardly? Am I backing down? And all of those things run through your mind. You know, what do you do? Well, you honor the game. You stand up for right. Right is might, and all those things we believe in for such a long time. And golly, I was at the Eddie Hearn tournament recruiting, and a coach who I considered a friend just really got in my face and started yelling at me. Said, "You talk too much. You're continue this thing like a broken record. Get off of it." And I go, "Whoa, what happened here?" You know, I said, "I surely didn't want to lose a friend." But, you know, the bottom line on the thing, we need to, you know, I've always said that all that it takes, or Edmund Burke's statement, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. Also Thomas Jefferson's quote, "Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God." It's not what the ITA did with the old directorship. I'm going to talk about the new directorship here in a second. But the old directorship was dictatorial, coercive leadership. It was not persuasive, nor was it leadership by example. They force-fed everything with their committee. They did not listen, definitely didn't listen to the women's poll that they, women even had 193 signatures against what they were doing, saying that it was basically dictatorial. The women wanted a two-thirds majority because 88% of them were against what the ITA was doing. The ITA basically got the Division I men's coaches to side in, those that make a little bit bigger salaries, those that are a little bit more in the limelight, those that where it profited them for a shorter format and to streamline their events, got them to join in. So the top coaches were about 50-50, but all of the men's coaches together, all the women's coaches together, it was the average of 71% against. They did what they wanted to anyway. The players, none of the players, just ask any of the players if they want to play no ad scoring. Ask any of the players if they like 10-point tiebreakers. 100%, none of them stick up for it. But it's how you do things. The ITA and the old leadership, the old regime there, the old leadership did what they wanted to do. Coercive leadership. So resistance to tyranny, tennis tyranny, I've called it, is obedience to God. I really, really believe that in all of us, we are United States of American citizens through and through, and we red-blooded Americans want freedom. We want freedom to decide. We want freedom for input. We want freedom in so many things. We want freedom definitely with our families, definitely with our schooling, definitely with our activities to be creative. Could you imagine piano teachers force-feeding one style of piano on somebody, or musicians or artists? Could you imagine art cookie-cuttering everything into one style? For whatever reason, we have gotten to the place where we now are force-feeding people into one style of things in our teaching, one style of things in our administrators, and the freedom is something that we're losing. It's tragic. So how should we stand up? Should we speak out? Is tolerance a virtue? I want to ask you, is tolerance of what these people are doing, we're tolerating, is that a virtue? Yes, we tolerate them. But should we tolerate that thing? Should we tolerate a lack of freedom? Folks, I love to get up in the middle of the night. If I can't sleep, I'll get up and my mind is racing. I watch Netflix. And recently they have a great thing on Netflix on, I've talked to you about the Winston Churchill Netflix. Watch those. They're just so good. Walking with Destiny with Winston Churchill. But the Roosevelts, Teddy Roosevelt, and then, of course, Franklin, too, and Eleanor, they're all. It's a really good series, five parts. It's about 5 to 6 hours. It's one of those Ken Burns specials. It's really very, very good. And it shows the contrast between Teddy and Theodore and his fifth cousin, Franklin, and his niece, Eleanor. And it really is interesting. It really points out a lot of differences that we still face in the hard, tough American way of doing things. Theodore Roosevelt was the kind of man that, I told my wife this morning that all men secretly would like to be like Theodore Roosevelt. All men secretly would like to be those kind of people that lived great adventures, that valiantly went after great goals, and that were fearless. Or if they were afraid, they conquered their fear by doing that which they did fear. But there was a quote this morning that really, really hit me, that Theodore Roosevelt said, and this really prompted me to do the program today, and I was going to do it with Randy Blumendahl as well. But he said, this is the quote, "To remain neutral between right and wrong means to serve what is wrong." And that is the essence, what I want to talk about today, is tolerance, really a virtue. Is tennis tolerance a virtue? It's not virtuous to be quiet. It's not virtuous to stand up and speak out. It's not virtuous to just go along and say, oh, well, this is the way it is, and that train's left the station. I get so sick of hearing USTA guys I talk to, oh, no, first of all, they go, oh, Chuck, we love you because you're passionate. They want to just say, Chuck, we really don't like you. We really are mad at you. But they're coin worth for 20 of them. So, oh, we're so glad you're passionate. You know, you know, basically that's their talking point. Also, their other one is, oh, this train's left the station. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard that over the past 3-4 years with the 10 and under tennis, with the scoring system, with those things. Oh, latest talking point is now, as I've questioned 2 or 3 USTA people on the committee, actually a couple on the junior committee, I said, hey, I know what you guys are doing. You're pushing no ad now down to junior tennis. Here's their talking point. Be ready, folks. They say, oh, we've got to get our kids ready for college. What? Wait a minute. It hasn't been an official NCAA thing for except the last month. So does that speak volumes about how much the USTA has had their hands into the college scene here? And it really, really takes you back. I am caught right now at this stage in my life saying, well, how much time does God going to give me? Do I have 20 years, 30 years, 10 years, 2 years, 2 days? And why? How am I going to use this time with my family or continue to fight this fight? But the Theodore Roosevelt quote, to remain neutral between right and wrong, means to serve what is wrong. We have a duty to stand up and to speak out. It is a duty. It is not just a, look, if we don't do our duty, our privilege will be taken away. If we don't do our duty, other people will dictate to us what they want, and we'll say, where did our freedoms go? And by the way, I love other points of view too. I love the mental gymnastics, the sparring. I love the mental sparring of ideas. I love to sit down with someone who completely believes different than me and talk about it. And one of my friends, I got another thing that happened. One of my friends I heard, and it is really hurt. He said, Coach Creasy doesn't talk. You don't talk to him. He talks at you. And, hey, folks, I'm my own worst critic. I they're probably right. I know my wife says that at times. I said, honey, the good Lord wired me this way, and I'm just trying to live out what God wanted me to be. And I'm learning every day, and I'm learning every day. And, yeah, I'm not going down to that coach's convention, I told her. I don't want to be Don Quixote continuously fighting windmills. But to remain neutral between right and wrong means to serve that which is wrong. St. Augustine said too that a bad law is no law at all. I've quoted this many times, again, when I battled against the ITA in the old regime. Now, let's take this up here a second, folks. The ITA, the old ITA was pretty much not an organization that I wanted any part of. It's not an organization, I don't know, they put me in their Hall of Fame and all that stuff, and sort of had to, I guess, I don't know. Some people were giving them grief, and it was just easier to put me in. After all, I wasn't going to do any more harm to them because I was out of college coaching. They surely didn't think I was making a comeback there. I'm going to make a comeback. Working on it. Going to make a comeback. Here we go. Just going to do the work little by little, inch by inch. It's a cinch, yard by yard, too darn hard. But we'll keep battling. But let me say this. We have a new group of leaders. Let me say this. I am hoping very much that I can call the new leader, Mr. Tim Russell. I'll say his name there because I'm not going to say anything bad about him because I haven't made a decision. I hope I can call him Beckett, Thomas Beckett. And I don't have to say he's Cromwell. Those of you who study this and seen, Beckett might be one of my favorite movies, as is A Man for All Seasons about Sir Thomas More and King Henry VIII. But the King Henry, I think, first or second, with Thomas Beckett, if you ever watch that movie, have a chance to watch it. It's fantastic. Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton. So Richard Burton was Thomas Beckett, who was Richard Burton's best friend. Excuse me, Peter O'Toole, the king's best friend. So Playboy King Henry, I think first or second, was really having trouble with the archbishop there. And who, you know, of course, the church in Rome still had jurisdiction and strength over the king. And so they had problems with the, the misgiving or the annoyances of the king or the bad things the king was doing. And so what Peter O'Toole did was he put Thomas Beckett in place. He canonized him, making him a saint. They ordained him as a priest, and Richard Burton says, please don't do this, my friend, please don't do this, don't put me in this position. He said, but you're my friend. Of course, I'll get favorable ratings, and things will go smoothly now. And Richard Burton, who was his friend as a playboy hanger-outer, when he was ordained, he became a priest and took his vows. And then when he was made archbishop, he was convicted by God, and he realized that he had a mighty duty to do, and he had to stand up against his best friend, which was Peter O'Toole and the king. So you can see the parallel I'm drawing there. The ITA handpicked this man, Tim Russell, to go in. And yeah, he's a very learned man, a very smart man. He's been a very kind man. And I'm telling you, I see the potential for a great turnaround. I have not yet made up my mind, but there's nothing to make me think that he might be a good and noble leader. And I'm hoping he becomes Beckett. In the end of the movie Beckett, of course, Richard Burton had to be killed. The king had him assassinated. The movie starts out with the king having to go do his penance and taking flagellation or being whipped for his killing of Thomas Beckett, who became St. Thomas of Becket, because he stood up against the king. He wasn't the puppet that the king wanted him to be. So right now my nickname for the new leader of the ITA could be Beckett, and that's what I pray and I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for good and noble leadership. I'm hoping he will do the right things. I'm hoping that he will listen to all the coaches. I'm hoping that he will dig deep into his being and be his own man, his own person, and listen to everyone. And I hope that he will make noble decisions. And I'd ask all of you to hope for the same. We need good leadership. We need good leadership. We need noble men in leadership positions. And he is definitely in my prayers, and I hope that he will be in yours for the burden he has, because college tennis is the kingpin of everything in American tennis. It is the sleeping giant. It is the mechanism that makes everything go. It's the thing that motivates all the young kids in junior tennis. It is the thing that we need to have as a vehicle for our young hopefuls to springboard into professional tennis. And if they do the wrong thing with college tennis, tennis will die as we know it. And the NOAAD scoring is a horrible, horrible mistake, just as the point system is a horrible mistake. These are crippling, crippling things. And I'm saying to you, is tolerance a virtue? Is it right to tolerate your youngster having to play a 10-point tiebreaker after they train for weeks and weeks and weeks? Is it right for you to tolerate the player that you coach having to play NOAAD scoring and play these abbreviated formats without even commenting? We're just going to assume. We don't want to make problems. You can ask in a good way, but make the point. Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. To remain neutral between right and wrong means that you're serving what is wrong. I'm asking the leader at ITA, please be Thomas Becket. Please be Thomas Becket. Do not be the Cromwell. Do not be the hired henchman. Do not just be a continuation of the organization that we had there before. The one that went ahead and did what they wanted to do against the will of the people, against the will of the coaches. I want a solution to this abbreviated scoring format very quickly, too, and then I've got a few minutes to wind up here. But, folks, we always, when I was on those committees, we would have the administrator said, but we need shortened formats. It might rain. We need more people playing. We need shortened formats. So I came out with the 11 scoring formats that you might use in order of what is best for player development. Now, I'd like to make the point that, again, there should be a definite distinction made between participation goals and competitive development goals. Participation goals, folks, it doesn't matter what you do. If you've got a weekend tennis outing and you're having a picnic and you're trying to have fun, play NOAAD, 10-point tiebreakers, 13-point, do whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter. If you're 35 and over, folks, you're not going to be a pro. 45 and over, you're not going to be a pro. I don't even care if you're winning gold balls in the 50s or 60s. You're still a participation event person. I'm talking about our youngsters in high school and in college and in our junior tournaments playing competitive developmental tennis, and they have the goals of getting better. So this distinction needs to be made. But we need the challenges that are physically, mentally, and emotionally all being addressed by our scoring system. Now, there's two goals of competitive formats. The two goals are, number one, to provide the best format for learning. The other is to provide this best scoring format that where the best player advances. The scoring system should not inhibit the best player from advances nor skew the results. We need those two goals to be accomplished. So I wrote out 11 formats for this to take place. Number one, and this is in order of effectiveness or development of players. What is the best format for the best player to advance and the best format for development? 3 out of 5 full sets. 3 out of 5, the best player advances and it helps with the development the most. What is number 2? Next best. True result is learning, for learning is, and to have the best player advance is 2 out of 3 full sets with regulation scoring, which we have done, by the way, for 132 years. And why would we change this? Why? They're looking at entertainment. The ITA was entertainment driven instead of education driven. And there might be some things going on there. I'm not going to speculate, but there's stuff going on behind the scenes, or the USDA would not be jumping in there as easily as well. So those two are the best, and those are the two that should be used absolutely predominantly in our youngsters who are trying to get better. So 3 out of 5 is too much. Boy, wouldn't you like to have a couple, wouldn't you like to have an invitational? Try an invitational with 8 people, 3 out of 5 sets. Got a few ideas there how we might get that going. But boy, we would start seeing some people stand up and beat their chest and love the sport to a deeper level again. So if you do have to abbreviate it, what might you do? Okay, the following, these ones that I'm giving you, the next 9, should only be done if sparingly and if they have to be for competitive junior development. The next best would be to play 2 out of 3 sets, sets 1 and 2, you do full sets. Number 3 set, start at 2-2 or 3-3. That's fine. 2-2 or 3-3. Why is that better than the tiebreaker? Well, the tiebreaker is much more of a crapshoot, as you know. Much more of a crapshoot. And the best thing about starting at 2-2, look, minimum of 16 points you have to win. So the deal is it's not that much more, not that many more games. But the point is you have to hold serve, you have to break serve, and it just it would mirror it much, much easier. Now, I want to give you a difference. The next best abbreviation, think about this. 2 out of 3 sets, but set number 1, and even set number 2 could be started. But let's say set number 1, you abbreviate it. You start that at 2-2 or 3-3, but full sets for the second set, full set for the third. This saves a lot of time. You can even do set 1 and set 2. You can start at 2-2, those, both. And again, don't start these at 0-0 and go 4-game sets because everybody knows that's a dumb-down and you cheapen our sport again. Start at 2-2. They say, hey, start at 2-2. First set, second set, full sets. Excuse me, first and second set, you can abbreviate. Full set for the third. Always, 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 third set is where all the learning takes place. We must protect the third set. How about the next thought? If you've got to play the 10-point tiebreaker, which I recommend you never do, but if you do, try it. Look, you're letting it count for a full set when you do the tiebreaker at the end. Why not play the tiebreaker for the first set? Then you play the second set, full set, and a potential third set, full set. Folks, it can go shorter, but the better player is going to win. Right now, you only allow the lesser player has a huge advantage and skews the results with that 10-point tiebreaker. The sixth scoring system. But let's the next scoring system, if you have to do that for player development, you could do all 3 sets, 2 out of 3 sets, start at 2-2. For your younger kids, it's okay, but don't go to no ad yet. Just play the regular scoring system. They've got to learn about grouping points and threes. They've got to learn how to group points and how about the momentum and the intricate scoring system that we have. Do not dumb it down for our kids. Just start at 2-2 each set. Court, the next scoring system, if you have to do, and this is number 7 of all of them, 2 out of 3 sets, set 1 and 2 are full sets. Tiebreaker for the third. Oh, that's number 7. We're using number 7. Number 7. Don't do that one. And then the rest of these are just bastardizations like that one. 2 out of 3 sets, no ad scoring is terrible. That's number 8. And number 9 would be 2 out of 3 sets, first 2 sets, no ad, tiebreaker for the third set. I mean, what a dumb down. Next would be 8-game pro sets. You see how low it rates? 8-game pro set is a complete dumb down. Regular scoring, then 8-game pro set, no ad scoring. Now remember, folks, most learning takes place in the third set of the match. Tiebreakers for the third sets do not teach the most important skills of the game, nor do they fully reward hard-earned successes. Likewise, the learning opportunities of a tough loss is minimized. You know that when our children lose a tough match, that it really is a great opportunity to learn. They have to make the decision that look, if I don't like for this to happen, I got to go get better. If I don't like to ride the bench, I got to go get better. If I don't like this feeling that I have, I better learn how to turn this bad pain into good pain. When you play abbreviations, it really doesn't hurt them enough for that to help their development. Also, if you win an abbreviated scoring, it's sort of like the scoring system did for you, a hokey-pokey deal, and you don't get the confidence that you need. Look, NOAAD scoring should seldom be used for junior competition. The learning opportunities of traditional scoring is just very in-depth, and it's the essence of our sport. So is tolerance a virtue? It absolutely is not. And if you do not stand up, speak out, we're not being virtuous. And I'm fighting at this stage in life to know how to use my time. And I told a good friend the other day that time is more valuable than money. Time is the most important thing in your life after 50, and it becomes paramount after 60. And you start to discern how do you want to use your time. And do you want it with foolishness? You absolutely do not. And do you want it with something of substance and passion and activities? Of course you do. But I do know this. I told my wife this morning, and actually my mother-in-law gave me a ride into work, and I just said, you know, in our hearts of hearts as men, all of us want to be like Theodore Roosevelt. We want to be able to fight for things that we believe in. Now, he might have not always been right with what he did, but every challenge he took on, I mean, it is just really amazing how his whole life he was standing up to anything that made him afraid. He did that which he feared. There's a saying by Emerson, I believe, that do that which you fear and the fear will die. But we as men all wish we could be that fearless person. We all as men would like to stand up, speak out, say what needs to be said. We all as men would like to be respected and earn respect from the next guy, from the next woman out there. You know, it's just the way we are wired. We have this inside of us, and you don't give respect to someone. Respect is earned. Trust is another thing that is earned, and your word has to matter. You cannot be whimsical. You should not be a flim-flam man. So, yeah, tolerance. Is tolerance a virtue? No. Tolerating people and their ideas is absolutely something we must do. That's not a virtue. That is a responsibility of all of us to tolerate other people and to give people the respect that is their due. You don't give people respect just for the heck of it. If you're disrespecting, that word disrespecting, for I've always had a problem with it. But to give respect is something you do in increments based on what is inside of that person. And, you know, tolerance is not a virtue. It is, if you are my friend and you are doing something you shouldn't be doing, you know what, I should not tolerate. And in tennis, means so much, so very much to me in my life that, no, I will never tolerate. Bad law is no law at all. To remain neutral, folks out there, remember what Theodore Roosevelt said, to remain neutral is to serve in between right and wrong is to serve what is wrong. And I really believe that we are in a time right now that will mark the history of our game, and we will become even more of a great and noble sport, or we will fade into a hodgepodge of simplistic activities that may or may not be worth our time of day. The time of day or our time. Resistance to things you don't believe in. We need to do it. And that's about it is. So, folks, we will hopefully next week have Coach Blumendahl on the show. I thank you for tuning in each week. God bless each and every one of you. Hug and stay close to your family. Nothing more important. You stay, you know, God, family, and fighting for the truth in life are become the most important things. We will see you all next week. This is Chuck Creasy.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. He's just made in America.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. God bless you, and see you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.